Hi, this is Bree Noble from Women of Substance Radio and Podcast, and you're listening to The Brassy Broadcast.
This episode brought to you by my day job at 317 Sound Design. Friends, you may not know that I'm a recovering blogger. I struggled for hours on end to create blog posts that nobody read, not even my mom. Then a couple of nuns from Toledo turned me on to podcasting when they asked if I would edit their show. I fell in love with the platform, started this show, and learned the ins and outs and ups and downs of what it takes to produce a successful podcast. I'm no longer a lonely blogger. I'm part of a conversation and an engaged community. If you're looking for help with launching your own podcast, or maybe just overwhelmed with editing, shoot me an email at Jen, J-E-N, at brassybroad.com. Thanks. Now enjoy the show. Hello, gorgeous. Welcome to the Brassy Broadcast, a weekly conversation where successful dames from across the music industry dish about the business of music. And honey, this ain't their first time at the rodeo. So take a load off, pour yourself a drink, and join the conversation. Hello, gorgeous. Welcome to the Brassy Broadcast. I'm your host, Jen Eads, with Brassy Broad and trailblazing rock and roller Lisa Brigantino from Hidden Pond Productions. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Jen. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm so happy that you could join us today. So to start things out, I'm going to share a little bit about you with our friends in the Brassy Bastion, and then you can fill in the juicy details as we go along. Lisa is an award-winning Brooklyn, New York-based singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist. She's also a trained composer with a Master of Music in Music Composition and Theory that writes for TV, film, and more. Her latest critically acclaimed CD, Wonderwill, is an eclectic collection of original songs ranging from folk and rock to old-time Americana and more. Among other accolades, the album was awarded Editor's Pick by IndieMusic.com, and Lisa placed 7th on their Top 25 of 2012. Lisa was an original member of Led Zeppelin, the world's first all-girl Led Zeppelin tribute band, and toured internationally with the band for a number of years playing bass, mandolin, and keyboards. She left the band in 2009 to get back to focusing on her original music. And in addition to her own performances, Lisa also performs with her sister, Lori Brigantino, in The Vicky and Nikki Show. And I'm just going to stop there for a second and say, I checked out some of your videos, and that is some funny stuff.
Yeah. That's a real good time. You know, my sister and I, we're only 13 months apart, and we've been performing together since we were kids and making music. And we both play a bunch of different instruments. And, you know, this is kind of separate from what we do together, where she often accompanies me and joins me when I do my singer-songwriter stuff. But this is a fully scripted, written show where we play two housewives from Minnesota named Vicky and Nikki who are on the road. And it's completely self-contained. We play about 9 or 10 different instruments. And up to this date, which I think we've been doing the act for about 10 years, we've written 10 or 11 scripted shows. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's very different from a lot of the other things that I do. And it's just a real joy to be able to write, perform, and work with my sister.
Cool. And I think we'll probably jump into that a little deeper here later. So in addition to that, when she's not in the Vicky and Nikki show, Lisa is also president of her own company, Hidden Pond Productions, Inc., which provides music supervision, licensing, rights clearance, consulting, and custom music scoring and music production to a variety of clients, including filmmakers, broadcasters, corporations, advertising agencies, and producers of all kinds. So we've got like 5 million things that we can talk about today, and I'm pretty excited about that. But why don't we start out with the work that you're doing at Hidden Pond Productions, and tell us a little bit more about what you do there and why you started the company.
Okay, well, I guess it kind of goes back to right after I got my master's in music and I moved to New York City. I decided that I didn't want to go the route of, you know, like waiting tables during the day and then writing on the off hours and performing at night. I wanted to do something with my daytime hours that I also felt would educate me and give me some options in the music industry. So I ended up taking a job as an administrative assistant in a company that did rights clearance. And it wasn't just music clearances. It was, you know, if you wanted to use a picture of Humphrey Bogart on a coffee cup, you could come to us. We cleared music, we cleared photographs, comic books, comic strips, you know, artwork, literature, just about anything that was copyrighted or protected, along with clearing music. So I really got a wonderful foundation in how to clear just about anything that you need permission for. And then from there, I became a partner and a vice president in another company. And I was at that company for about 6 years. And we did, again, a lot of the same type of work, but we were becoming more involved with music supervision, where we were actually picking music for our clients as opposed to having them just come to us and saying, oh, I want to, you know, use, I heard it through the grapevine for a national TV commercial, get me the rights. Well, that's all well and good. And, you know, I can do that very easily. Mm-hmm. But what was starting to happen is advertising agencies coming to us and saying, you know, we're looking for a really cool tune for this upcoming spot for X, Y, and Z. And then we would go out and source music. We would find music and present it back to the client. And so we were getting more involved in the creative process, which is always more exciting. And then while I was at that company is when I became involved with Led Zeppelin. So it was very challenging because I was vice president of this company, managing an employee of 15, managing 15 employees, and then starting to get involved in the band, which was at the time just supposed to be a side project. You know, we're going to play once or twice a month here in New York City, and that's it. But things started to pick up, and as we became more and more popular, and we started doing gigs outside of the city, I realized that I could not keep up a full-time job, which at that time was a blessing, frankly, mm-hmm. in disguise. And it was a way for me to segue out of working for the man and basically working as a full-time musician and also taking some of my clients with me who had been with me since, you know, I started in this business and who kind of followed me wherever I went.
Uh-huh.
And that's how Hidden Pond Productions, which was a DBA at the time, kind of was born. And so as I continued to play and travel around the world, I was also servicing licensing clients and music supervision clients and rights clearance clients. And I incorporated in 2011. And, you know, I did leave Led Zeppelin in 2009. So to have the company to come back to was really wonderful. And it's allowed me, you know, I like to say that after 20 years, I finally figured out how to do it, how to make it all work.
Yeah.
You know, basically it's like, I am now in control of my schedule. I have nobody telling me when I have to do something and when I don't. I choose to do what I want, when I want to do it. If I want to go out on tour for a week, I can do it and I can still do my work if I need to, you know? So it's really been fantastic. And at the same time, in addition to the very nitty gritty details of licensing and contracts and music supervision, we also supply original custom music and scoring for clients as well. So some of my clients who used to just come to me for licensing are now coming to me and saying, you know, we have a national TV commercial. Can you write something for us? So that's been fantastic. And when I say we, I include my husband, Tom Milioto, in that, who is a wonderful composer and engineer. We have our own project studio, and he's a fantastic guitarist, both classical and electric. You know, we just kind of make it all work.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you were able to manage, because I know a lot of the folks listening to this are still technically working for the man and doing music because they love it. Mm-hmm. So as you were out on the road with Led Zeppelin and handling, you know, the clients that you had, mm-hmm. how did you manage all of that?
Well, you know, I think first of all, I'm extremely organized. And I have to say that that's been the thing that's kind of helped me to compartmentalize and keep everything going, all of these separate things going. I'm extremely organized. And, you know, at the time when I was in the band, which was really from 2003 to 2009, but I left my job in 2005. So it was really about 3.5 years where I was on the road. We were doing 150 plus dates a year. And then, you know, and then also doing the work. I would say that in the past several years, the work has picked up. And during those first years of kind of having my own company, it just worked out that I wasn't so busy that I couldn't do what I needed to do in terms of performing and traveling. You know, it was manageable. So, and, you know, I like to say too that, you know, it's just me. I don't have any employees. I don't want any employees. Sometimes if I have to source some things out, I will, but, you know, I have colleagues that I can, that I'm in touch with if I need to, but I really take as much work as I can handle. And I know some people are like, wow, I mean, you could, if you wanted to, you could really grow this and you could have 10 employees and you could, that's not what I want to do. I don't want, because I did that once before and I know what happens. It just completely takes you away from the other things that you may want to be doing. And, you know, if I didn't have, you know, 5 or 6 other things I wanted to do, maybe that would be okay. But right. I really have to be careful about saying, I've gotten very good at learning to say no, which I never was very good at as a younger person. You know, sometimes you just have to just say, no, I can't do that because I know I want to do this other thing. And if I say yes to this, I'm going to have to say no to that. So yeah, it's really about learning to manage all of the different aspects. Yeah.
What do you like most about the music supervision piece of it?
I would say, you know, in addition to being a musician and a composer, I'm a huge music fan. I'm a huge fan of all different genres of music. I love to listen to music. And I find it exciting to be given a project and to be able to find the thing that I think is going to work for that, you know, to accompany that project, whether it's a corporate video where, you know, I may have a client who is doing a video that's a motivational video for their employees, or whether it's a client that is looking for a piece of music for a product that they're going to be advertising. I really find it challenging to find the right piece of music for those things. And that's the exciting part of it. And, you know, even the administrative part of it, it can become tedious if you let it, but I think done it for so many years that it kind of becomes second nature. So I don't mind it that much. And I really see it as all part of the whole piece of what I'm doing, whether it's, you know, sourcing and finding the great tune, whether it's drafting an agreement or whether it's reading the agreement from a major music publisher or record label and making comments. And it's all part of delivering the client what they want. So, you know, I'm kind of okay with both aspects of it.
Yeah. So how do you determine that a piece of music is going to be the correct fit for a brand? And how do you guide your client down that path when all they say is, oh, we'll just know it when we hear it?
Right. And you do find that a lot, that the clients, and not even so much my production clients, usually they're pretty savvy, but their end client, whether it's the, you know, the corporation or the product, maker, they don't have the vocabulary to really say what they want. Number one. Number two, they may not know what they want. But what happens is you do get some parameters. I mean, you know, it's got a lot to do with not only, you know, there are certain genres they may want to focus on. There are keywords that they want to focus on, that the lyrics need to have. They may want a particular catchy type of hook, or they may want something that's completely instrumental. I mean, you do get some of that information. So it's not just you're going out blindly looking for things. There I try to focus them in as much as I can, because that's going to, that will make me do the best work that I can. It also has to do with budget. It has to do with what kind of tune are they looking for? Is it a, are they looking for a well-known tune for national TV commercial? Do they have the budget for that kind of thing? Do they have six figures? Is this something that's going to air just in the United States? Is it going to be on the internet? You know, is there, are they going to use the lyrics in print in advertising? I mean, there's so many different parameters that go into how something gets priced. But the thing that's kind of cool, these, I would say maybe the past 8 or so years, is that people are much more open to just cool indie music, things that will work with the budget and with the creative. It doesn't necessarily have to be well known, which is not the way it was when I started in the business. It really was mostly folks coming to you asking you for really well-known songs that they wanted to use in their, whether it was a corporate video or their, or, you know, an advertising campaign. So there's much more flexibility now. Well, of course, the budgets just aren't there that they used to be 10 or 15 years ago. So the advertising budgets are much lower for music. But that also gives up-and-comers and indie artists more of an opportunity. But it also means there's a lot more stuff to weed through. I mean, you know, if I do a music search, you know, I have to listen to a lot of stuff. And especially if it's, you know, the client is just saying, just find me something, you know, cool and upbeat in this genre, then I do have to look through a lot of things. But all of these little things come into to play in terms of what's going to work for the client, you know, budget. And sometimes, you know, there's just something in a tune that catches my ear that sounds well done, put together, focused. And because I know the client, and also a lot of these folks I've been working for many years, I know what they're looking for. I know what will work for them. If it's a more mainstream corporate client, you know, there's certain things that are going to resonate with them more than maybe an up-and-coming ad agency that's working for somebody in Europe, and they're off on some other type of tangent in terms of what they want. So yeah, it's sometimes it's like finding a needle in a haystack, but often you really do get enough of a direction to kind of get a good start.
What are your favorite places to go out and look for indie music that might work for a campaign?
Well, you know, because I've been in the business a long time, and I'm not even going to tell you how long, but a long time, you know, I have relationships with all the major music publishers and record labels. I have relationships with a lot of indie publishers and indie labels that are, you know, really fairly well known. Then I've got wonderful relationships with a lot of indie music reps where I can go. And they are representing artists and songwriters where I can go and I can find something where I'll get an all-in deal that's very reasonable. And when I say all-in, and this is something that, you know, a lot of indie musicians may not realize, is that there are two parts to a song. There are two parts when you are licensing. One is the music composition as written by the songwriters, and that right is controlled by a music publisher. And then there is the master recording by a particular artist, which is then controlled by a record label. Now, a lot of indie artists are, you know, they're their own publisher, they own the master, so you don't have to deal with a lot of separate companies. And these reps will rep indie artists where, you know, again, it's a one-stop shop. I can go and I can get publishing and master, I can get one fee, I can do one contract, and that's really nice. There's just a proliferation of music out there these days. You know, I have friends who are musicians, and sometimes if I get a project in and I think it might be right, I'll throw it out to them. Mm-hmm. But primarily, you know, and what happens sometimes is people will come to me saying, you know, can you try and place my song in a television commercial? That's kind of not what I do. I'm not a placement service. I'm a music supervisor and a licensing specialist that works on behalf of users of music. I work, my clients are the ad agencies. My clients are the corporations and producers. And really that's kind of what my focus is. Although I do some music supervision for film, I've been doing quite a bit lately for indie films. I really don't work in television per se. You know, I don't find music for television shows. That's kind of a different thing. And I even have somebody who works for me who is trying to find me placements of my own stuff in television because I'm not in that world.
Right.
You know what I
mean?
Even though I do music supervision, it's just a whole different ballgame. So
do you find as a composer, do you enjoy having those parameters if you're writing something specifically to spec that they've sent over? Is that something that you enjoy or would you just rather crank something out that you've been working on?
You know, it's interesting. I do enjoy that. And I think part of that comes from, you know, really being a trained musician and coming through a composition program, like I did at SUNY Fredonia, where, you know, there's kind of two parts to it. You know, music is this wonderful, magical thing that can sometimes seem so intangible and it's very spiritual and it's very, it's just very ethereal. On the other hand, it is a craft. Mm-hmm. I learned that if, you know, I need to toss out a few pieces by tomorrow, I have to be able to do that. I can't sit and wait for a lightning bolt of inspiration to hit, you know?
Right.
That's not where I come from. It's not my training. That being said, I have written those songs where they just seem to have written themselves, and that's kind of a different thing. Mm-hmm. But I really do enjoy working with parameters. I find it very challenging to be told, you know, we want something for this product for a 30-second commercial and a 60-second commercial, and it's got to have these elements and da-da-da-da-da. Wow, you know, that's like a puzzle. And I have no problem with that. And I find that very challenging and frankly, not too difficult, you know? So, I kind of enjoy doing that. And, which is wonderful because I do have clients that ask me to do that. And I really do like it.
So what's been the biggest challenge for you when trying to get new clients?
I would say it's trying to, you know, find places where I can find new clients. I do participate in you know, various Twitter chats if I can, and just kind of branch out and reach out to people. I have found Twitter and LinkedIn to be really useful, actually, in making connections with people. I've had a lot of clients that have come with me through a lifetime of doing this work, you know, no matter what company I've been with, whether it's the two I was at previously or now with my own company, they've kind of stayed with me and followed me. And the word of mouth thing is still very valuable. They will tell people about me and I will have new clients that come to me because they've talked to somebody that I've done business with for 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I just got a job this morning from a corporate client of mine that I've been working with for almost 23 years. That's nice. That's really nice. So, you know, keeping those connections up, networking, those are just really extremely valuable things. And, you know, because it's really not so much, yes, you want new clients, but you want those new clients to stay with you and you want them to come back. It's really about the return client, you know?
What has been key for you in keeping a client for 23 years? How do you nurture that relationship?
You do good work. You keep up a very clear communication trail. You know, it's not as common these days to get on the phone with people as it was when I started doing this work. I mean, basically that's how you did work.
Yeah.
I hate to sound like, you know, I'm coming in on the Pony Express, but But you know, when I started in this business, it was like telephone and fax.
Yeah.
If you needed to find out who a music publisher was, you had to call ASCAP and BMI. You couldn't get online and you know, check out their database. And they would only give you 3 songs at a time. So you'd have to get the 3 songs, hang up, and call back and get 3 more.
Oh, like, my gosh.
If you were trying to source 20 or 25 songs, it was ridiculous. But anyway, what I'm saying is, so, you know, talking to people, and then over the years, just kind of continuing to stay on their radar and keeping in touch with them. You know, I was doing that before there was LinkedIn. I was doing that before there was email. And people have told me, you're so good at keeping in touch with people. And I really feel that that's been something, not only, you know, personally with friends and family, but that has really helped me maintain these relationships over these years.
So if you had to rate the following 3 things as far as how they go in just your own personal success and what you've seen in the industry that you're involved in, which is the most important? So we've got adaptability, skill set, or musicianship, and networking. How would you rate those 3 as far as their importance to you?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on what I'm doing. If you're talking about getting work, I mean, it's hard to say. I would say in terms of continuing to work as a musician and continuing to work in supervision and licensing, I would say networking, number one.
Okay.
And then I would say skill set, whether it's musicianship or whether it's, you know, being able to write a letter and sound like you know what you're talking about, which, you know, is more and more these days is a challenge. Mm-hmm. With unfortunately what I do see sometimes and the kind of stuff that I get, and then adaptability. Yeah. I mean, those are all very important, but I would say, you know, the networking thing, number one, if I go back and I look at my career as a musician and also in the business side of things, I know the spots where those, you know, networking opportunities brought me to the next place. It's really kind of cool to see. Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to shift gears and we're going to talk about what it's like working with your sister in the Vicky and Nikki shows.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think I could work with my sister. I love her, but we might kill each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because a lot of people say that to us. They're like, how do you, you know, I can't believe that you work. Well, and you know, as I said, we have kind of been performing all our lives together. We come from a very musical family and we were always, you know, doing skits after dinner and playing music and, you know, playing. Our grandmother taught us to play ukulele when we were 4 years old. And I mean, it just started really early. Plus, she's my only sibling. And so we're just in general, we're close. And we're physically close. She lives 2 blocks away from me in Brooklyn. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah. So it makes rehearsing really easy. But, you know, the Vicky and Nikki show was actually an idea that she had. I mean, and it's kind of a long story how it came about, but she basically called me one day and said, well, so we're going to do this thing and you have to put a gown on and a wig and we're going to be characters. And I was like, great, sign me up, you know? So that's really been just such a great opportunity to do something totally different that I wouldn't have expected. And I really enjoy it. I like writing comedy. I like performing as a character. I love being on stage with my sister. So it's really been wonderful.
How long does it take you guys to prepare the material for a new show?
For a brand new show, sometimes it can take, I think it could take about a year to write a whole new show.
Oh, wow.
Because it's, you know, as I said, it's scripted and it's also the shows are, it's not only original music, but we are also doing cover songs that like kind of inappropriate versions of cover songs.
Nice.
So what we'll do is we'll take like Lady Gaga's Paparazzi, but we'll do it as a bluegrass version with accordion and, you know, banjo.
Nice.
So we really, it's about twisting these things. It's about reworking, and maybe not a year, maybe more like 6 to 9 months. I'm trying to think of when we did Inside Vicky and Nikki, which was an autobiographical show. We did a few years ago. Yeah, exactly. I think it was about 9 months. And then we do a yearly, at the end of every year in December, we do our holiday show. And although we've kind of renamed it, it's been everything from Vicky and Nikki's Holiday Sleigh Ride to Vicky and Nikki's Jingle Bell Jamboree. I mean, there are certain material that stays intact in that show, and then there's other material that changes out. But, you know, we'll probably, if we do that in December, this coming December, we'll start working on it in July, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Probably July, August is when we'll start tweaking some material and deciding what we want to keep and what we don't want to keep. So yeah, it's quite a process.
Well, and I will be sure to include links to some of those video clips in the show notes so that everybody can check it out.
Oh, Jesus, really? It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Sorry, that's Nikki. Vicky and Nikki are from Minnesota. So, you know, it's really the farthest we could get from two Italian girls from New York City. So,
yeah, exactly. So I believe we've all got a unique superpower that we bring to the table that's been instrumental in our success. What's your superpower?
I think I have two. I think one is a more of a personality trait, and I would say that's empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I really seem to naturally be able to empathize with folks and put myself in their position, and personally and professionally, I think that's been something that has really helped me in my life. I would say from a musical standpoint, you know, although I am a trained musician and I've taken lessons on piano and violin and trained in college and voice and everything, I have an extremely good ear that I started noticing when I was very young, where I could hear something on the radio and then start playing it back. At the time, I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I didn't realize what a chord progression was. I didn't really understand that. But I've had this ability all my life to be able to hear something and play it back. And what's happened is, and now I know what those, you know, what progressions are, and I understand what I'm hearing, and I understand how that manifests itself into, you know, whether I'm jamming with people or whatever. But, you know, I'm often the bass player at these jams that I do here in New York, where we will play songs that I might not have even played before, but because I heard them on the radio 30 years ago, something in my head has remembered the progression, and I'll be able to play it. So I'm a freak of nature that way. It's a blessing, and that kind of ear has really helped me to be able to play well with other people, to be able to, you know, sit down and write a song and not need a guitar or piano in front of me. I don't need to write it an instrument. I know what the progression is going to sound like. I know where it's going to go. So, I would say that might be my other weird little superpower.
Well, and how, I would think that had to have a huge impact on your ability to learn the Led Zeppelin catalog.
Yes, it did. It was extremely helpful. And you know, when I was in the band, I was essentially John Paul Jones. So I was bass, keys, bass pedals, which I would play while I was playing the keyboards, and mandolin. So I was the one who was shuffling between, you know, three instruments on
stage.
And, you know, first of all, his parts are just so amazing. I mean, to be able to step in to his shoes for just a little while in my musical life was such a gift. And to be able to play in the band and to tour the way we did, you know, I mean, it was really one of the highlights of my musical career. But yeah, really having to break that down and to listen, really get into those parts. And, you know, we didn't play everything exactly note for note. That's not what we were about. We weren't trying to we weren't like other tribute bands. First of all, we didn't look like them, and we couldn't. We were women.
Yeah.
So we weren't trying to be this kind of copycat act. We just took the music and we did the music of Led Zeppelin. And we put our own spin on it. You know, we didn't do note for note solos that were identical. I mean, everything was close, but we really brought ourselves to the party. So it was really something.
Yes. Yes. And I can vouch for that because I actually saw you guys once.
When?
It was in Indianapolis. So it was,
Was it like pre-2009?
I think so. I'm pretty sure it was.
We did play Indianapolis a couple of times.
Yeah, it was at the Music Mill.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and it was great. I just remember just being in awe, like, oh my gosh, these girls are killing it.
Yeah. And it was so funny, especially when, you know, we started out and we were doing our first tours in like Colorado. That was one of the first places that where we did like consecutive dates. And then we did several tours of Europe, Germany. You know, we would, before the show, we would kind of peek out from behind the curtain and you'd see these guys just standing in the front with their arms crossed, scowling, you know, just waiting for us to fail.
Yeah.
And then we would get on stage and we would kick into the Immigrant Song. And yes. In 30 seconds, the jaws would drop.
Yeah.
You know, and they would be that way for the rest of the show. So it was always kind of, interesting to watch that happen. And
that's awesome. So with all of that touring and all the places that you've had the opportunity to play and in your career as a musician, what's been your most mind-blowing experience where you were just like, oh my god, did that really just happen?
There've been a few. I would have to say probably performance highlight was doing Bonnaroo in 2008. You know, we were the first all-girl band to play Bonnaroo. We were the first tribute band to play Bonnaroo. And we headlined. We played an hour and a half set at a festival, which is almost unheard of.
Wow.
So that was really amazing. Doing our debut album in 2007, recorded and produced by Eddie Kramer, who, of course, engineered many of the Led Zeppelin albums.
Oh,
you know, there
yeah.
was one point where we were in the studio and, you know, I had the headphones on and I had my bass plugged in and I looked and behind the glass is Eddie Kramer. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, oh my God, I cannot believe, just keep it together and get through this because this, I mean, it was just amazing. And, you know, also just with my own stuff, I think getting that first national television commercial where we wrote and produced the music was really exciting, you know. And so I would say from doing my own stuff, that was really pretty cool.
So what's revving your creative engines right now?
Well, I've got a lot of things going on. We've been trying to finish my next album. We are in the process of recording that now, and I'm hoping to have something done by the end of 2015, maybe the fall. I did release a single last year called Every Day's a Journey. I released that in October, and I also released a Christmas song in December, a single. But it's time for an album. My last album was in 2010, which is Wonder Wheel, which is still getting airplay and placements, but it's time for some new stuff. So working on that, working on some possible various productions with Vicky and Nikki.
Cool.
And other things. You know, I've got some indie films that I'm working on right now, music supervising, and you know, also working on trying to get placements of my own stuff. So I'm in this kind of unique position where I'm on both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
And you know, in addition to the supervising and the licensing and original music, Hidden Palm Productions also does consulting for songwriters and musicians. I have people I work with who, you know, sometimes they need help with how this all works. And
yeah.
You know, I'm there and I know how it all works. And so I do consulting with folks. But basically, you know, if people call me or email me and say, you know, do you do this? I usually say yes, because either I do it or I'm two steps away from knowing how it's done. So the answer is usually yes. You know, I try to find different ways of using my knowledge and my abilities to work with different types of people.
So what is the best way for people to connect with you and find out more about upcoming projects?
I would say to go to my various websites, which are hiddenpalmproductions.com, lisabrigantino.com, and vickyandnicky.com. And if you go there, you will find links to all social media. And really, I encourage people to sign up for mailing lists. I really feel strongly about mailing lists as being important. And, you know, as wonderful as the social media is, there's nothing like having somebody on your mailing list who will continue to get your material and who is specifically looking to connect with you that way. So I would say, you know, go to the website, sign up for the mailing lists.
All right, Brassy Bastion, you heard it here. And unfortunately, we have blown through our time for this conversation because this is exactly how I knew it was going to go down because there's so much that we could talk about. So hopefully you will come back on the show again one of these days.
Oh, I would love to.
And we will pick some other fabulous topic to talk about.
Great.
All right, Lisa, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, you're so very welcome. Thanks, Jen.
Well, Brassy Bastion, my glass is empty and my head is full. You can swing by brassybroad.com to check out the show notes with links to any websites and resources we mentioned. And if you like what you hear, subscribe and share it with anyone else you think would dig it. That's how we build the community. The conversation continues on the Brassy Broad Facebook page and at Brassy Broad Jen on Twitter. I would love to hear from you. Until next week, be brazen, be bold, and rock on.